right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. And I want to welcome back to a gentleman that I just admire so much, the courage and knowledge and wisdom and that he possesses and you know, is just almost unmatched. And it's been a while, but I'm always so happy to have my good friend, Mr. Reggie Jackson of the Nurturing Diversity Group and also the author of the Milwaukee Independent with us. How you doing, dear brother?
Earl, I'm doing really well, man. Appreciate the opportunity to be back with you. I wish we could do this more often, but, you know.
Yeah, man.
Anytime I'm on, it's great.
Listen, man, I want to first talk about the article in June 28th of the racial imbalance of Milwaukee's 2022 residential property assessments. Because, you know, when we talk about racism and all those kinds of things, people look at it as somebody, you know, called them a racial slur, or, you know, people have denied you access to a facility, or, you know, there are all sorts of tentacles to that hideous or heinous crime of racism. But this one, when we're talking about property assessments, you know, people don't think about that. But it is as damaging and in many instances more damaging than all the rest.
Yeah, definitely is. You know, I think one of the things that really stood out to me when we first heard that the assessments were coming out and that there were going to be significant increases, it was from an article in the Journal Sentinel, kind of warning people before the assessment, you know, letters came out. And then, of course, I got my assessment letter. I live in the 7th District. And, of course, a couple days after, I think the day after the assessments came out, the Journal Sentinel did a follow-up article, you know, responding to the specifics of what was released. But really, it wasn't really covered in the local media beyond that, other than, you know, hearing that, yeah, overall it went up 18% for the city, you know, and people are surprised by it. And the thing that really made me madder than anything else about it, Earl, and part of the reason that I ended up creating the map to show everybody what it looked like and then writing the article was that nobody was responding to it from, you know, the Common Council. The only one who made a statement was Alderman Bob Ballman. And, you know, he was upset, but what he said didn't really apply to his district so much. It was almost like he was speaking for the rest of the alders. And he specifically said there would be a flood of protest over this, an absolute flood, because I can speak for a lot of my neighbors. Their incomes haven't gone up 18%. You will be putting a substantial squeeze on the homeowners trying to hang on in some of these lower income neighborhoods. And I applaud Bob Ballman for sitting there, because he didn't have to say anything. Now, those should have been the things that the alders in the districts that went up well above the 13% average should have been out there saying something. So I scoured, you know, the internet. I scoured all of our local news channels. I looked at the websites for each of the alders to see if any of them, and the mayor as well, had made a statement about the assessments. And none of them said a word. So I'm thinking, now, wait a minute. If you were not a person who heard about this by reading the Journal Sentinel, and we know readership is down significantly,
right,
for the Journal Sentinel, then how else were you going to hear about the fact that in some of the districts the increase was over 30%? How would you know that? Your alders aren't telling you. The mayor isn't making a big deal of it. Nobody is really saying it. So I said, I know there are a lot of people out there that would be very concerned if they knew this. So I took the data from the assessor's office that they released to the public, and you would only see it if you read that article on the Journal Sentinel. There's no other place you can find it. I went to the assessor's website. It's not like, oh, here, you need to read this. So I took that and I created a map, very intentionally made it look like a redlining map. from back in the 30s and 40s. And what I did is I showed the districts with the highest increases in red, the ones with the lowest increases I put in green, just like the redlining.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. I'm looking at the map right now.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's very clear when you look at it that the four districts with the highest increases, District 12, mostly Latino neighborhood, right? District 15, District 7, District 2, mostly black neighborhoods. So District 12 went up 25% on average. District 15, 31% on average. District 7, 32% on average. And then District 2 went up 30% on average. Whereas the districts that are predominantly white parts of the city, District 3 along the lakefront, only went up 10.3% on average. District 4, Bob Bauman's district, went up 12.4%. And then the Southwest District, District 11, went up 13.6% on average. Now, you look at this in the way that I represented it, because I wanted people don't want to look at some table and try to figure out numbers. So I wanted to graphically represent it just to show people, like, there's something wrong with this picture, Earl. And we know what redlining maps did. So what does this say about the state of Milwaukee? What story does it tell?
So, Reggie, so let me say this, because I'm in the district where I went up the most, Sherman Park. And so here's where people need to understand the impact of this. Maybe we forgot in 2008, some of us.
Right.
But I remember increases in property values that led people to believe that were done, and assessments that were done, I forgot the exact year. And it led people to believe that their property values had grown 35-40% in 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And people then went and refinanced their homes.
Exactly.
Mistakenly believing that their properties were really valued. The property taxes of the city were raised in accordance with these assessments. And then when they turned around a year or two later and dropped them back down to where they originally were, they didn't drop the property taxes back down. And so people were upside down on their properties, and many people lost their homes, Reggie. You remember that?
Yeah, I remember exactly what happened, Earl. And, you know, this is the thing about it that I've been trying to let people know, Earl. These things happen. They don't happen in a vacuum. So there's no accident that what we saw in 2006 led to what happened in 2008. Right. And I'm trying to let people know that what's happening today will be related to what happens tomorrow and the year after tomorrow, because we're going to see the same thing happen again in many respects. The biggest difference will be if we go back to 2006. Prior to 2006, in the late 1990s and the early 2000s, you had 62 subprime lenders that descended on the city of Milwaukee. 62 of them, Earl. And what they were doing was they were going after people who had paid their mortgages off already. They weren't going to people who were buying new houses specifically. They were targeting people who had bought new houses, but they were also targeting people that had already paid their mortgages off.
Right.
So people who had first mortgage and paid off, these are the people that they went to and said, hey, man, look at your house. Look at the value of your house today. It's gone up by X number of dollars. That means you have all of this extra equity. And what do they tell you to do with your equity?
Take it out.
Borrow against it. Man, look,
right.
Put that new roof on your house. Hey, man, pay off those credit cards that you have. Hey, man, go on and pay for your kids, college loans.
Go on that great vacation you've always wanted to go on. We've got the money. We'll give it to you.
Yep. And people, well, guess what? Everybody and their grandmother was telling them to do this. This is the way, you know, the economy was doing really well, and this would be a way to take advantage of that equity, which is the greatest tool that you have as a homeowner. But what ends up happening, as you said, Earl, when the false narrative across the country about how valuable homes are fell apart. Because everybody knew, Earl. It wasn't a secret. Everybody knew that these houses weren't worth what people were saying they were worth.
Except for some poor souls who did not know any better and were suckered.
Yep.
And black people were damaged the most. The only thing we had was the equity in our homes. And we have never recovered from that scam. And, you know, people didn't go to jail, Reggie, right? The people who should have went to jail.
The bubble burst, Earl. Now, overall, it caused the collapse of the U.S. economy and it caused the collapse of the world economy, right?
Yes.
There was literally one person who went to prison. One man was blamed for all of this. And ended up going to prison, Earl. And nobody knows. I know his name because I wrote an article about him. I can't even remember what it is off the top of my head right now. But nobody knows who this guy is. You ask. And listen, Earl, this is the important point about it. This was criminal activity, Earl.
Yes.
This was stuff that should have never been allowed for you to take advantage of poor people. Because that's who they focus their energy on. They focus on poor people, and they gave them this kind. You see, this is part of what really bothers me as well. The narrative about what happened back then was, well, you know, all of those people were irresponsible. You know,
they should have known that their houses weren't worth that. They should have known this.
Right. Yep. And they got loans that they knew they couldn't afford. X, Y, and Z. That's what they tell you. You know, those subprime loans. Those weren't people that were going to get the good loans anyway. That's not what happened.
You know, Reggie, hold on, man. Because, man, got to go to a break, man. I want to continue this conversation. On the line, my good friend, the author, one of the authors of the Milwaukee Independent, and he is with Nurturing Diversity Partners, Mr. Reggie Jackson. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. What do you say? You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Mr. Reggie Jackson. He's the author of the Milwaukee Independent, and he's one of the founders of Nurturing Diversity Partners. And you know, Reggie, and I'm so glad that we're talking about this because many people have forgotten, right? They've forgotten what took place. And so when you look at what happened in the aftermath of that and the median wealth for black people and as opposed to the median wealth for whites was already a horrendous number. But after what transpired there, it really, really got to the point of numbers that are so minuscule and embarrassing that the nation ought to be ashamed of itself. And to somehow, you know, blame people who trust, you know, this. Mm-hmm. And so they, as you stated, all of these subprime criminals were allowed to come amongst the people who didn't have anything but their homes. That's all we've ever had in the way of worth in this nation. And to take away what people could leave for their families and give them a leg up is a crime that, you know, people aren't talking about. And here we are again. Reggie is right back.
Yeah.
That's my issue, man. It's right back. People are going to believe. People are going to believe. When I saw my assessment, the first thing I said was, I can't believe they're coming back with this scam again.
Yeah.
But I'm aware of it. There are people who aren't, and they're going to lose their homes again.
They are, and you know, the point I was making right before we went to break is that the narrative about what happened with the housing bubble bursting is that all of these irresponsible people got loans, and you know, these subprime loans, this and subprime loans that. Listen, the people that got subprime loans, in many cases, who were Black and Hispanic, were people who deserved a prime loan. So for those who don't know the difference between a prime loan and a subprime loan, a prime loan is a loan given to people with the highest credit worthiness. So people with really good, you know, credit history, a really good credit score. But if you have a lower credit score, you know, not matching where they want you to be, but you're still eligible, you'll get what they call a subprime loan. So you're going to have a higher interest rate with a subprime loan, right? You're going to pay higher fees. And so there were studies done by the Department of Justice, and they sued. They sued banks that were discriminating against Black and Hispanic borrowers nationwide for giving them subprime loans when they were eligible for prime loans, charging them higher fees and higher interest rates simply because they were Black and Hispanic. There was no other rationale for it, right? So the banks that got caught, Associated Bank, got caught with their hand in the cookie jar, right? They settled with the federal government. You also had Wells Fargo. Got caught with their hand in the cookie jar, and they settled with the federal government. And then you had the biggest of them, Countrywide Financial, which is now part of Bank of America. They got caught. They settled, Earl, in 2000, I think it was 2012. They settled for $335 million. Wells Fargo settled for $175 million. So
the people who lost their properties didn't get any of it.
This is what they did.
Go ahead.
They settled with them. And they set up a system where moving forward, we're not going to do this to people again. That was literally what they
know,
did. They didn't help those people that lost their
homes. I know, man. It's why I come in here and people think that I hate the government, right? They think that I'm. Why do I hate our government so much? You know, when you're a person of color, you have a reason to hate the government, because the government has not been fair and equitable to its citizens of color ever in this country, ever in the history of it. And even at this point in time, 2022, we continue to face the exact same things over and over and over. You know, well, they're criminals, and they're, you know, crime is up, and there's crime in the central cities, and nobody wants to do anything about the crime, but they don't say one doggone thing about the crime that's being perpetrated by our government and by corporations. You know, you talk about subprime loans, man. You know, those are predatory loans. And nobody can question whether or not they are. Everybody knows it. And yet our government allowed it, Reggie.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, elected. And who's our government?
Yeah.
The elected officials, both Democrat and Republicans, were both guilty.
Right. And this is the thing about it, Earl, that I think bothers people more than anything else about what happened with the Great Recession after the housing bubble fell apart, is that Wall Street firms were on the brink of going out of business. Like, the largest Wall Street firms were, you know, literally about to fall apart and go out of business. And the federal government stepped in, and this was under President Barack Obama.
Under President Barack Obama, who actually he deregulated Wall Street.
They stepped in, Earl, and they bailed these Wall Street firms out.
Too big to fail.
With the exception of, you know, Lehman Brothers. Now, Lehman, they let them just fall apart. They don't exist anymore. They were one of the largest. So they used them as an example, in my opinion. Say, okay, well, we're not going to help everybody. But listen, you helped the biggest. I mean, you bailed out these banks that are worth billions and billions of dollars, Earl. You gave them billions of dollars so that they wouldn't fail, like you said, the whole, you know, too big to fail. But what about the American public? Was the American public, the average American who was a homeowner that was looking at losing their home, did they bail them out? Did they say, hold on, banks, don't foreclose on them. We'll give you money to catch them up. They didn't do that, Earl.
No.
And millions of Americans lost their homes.
And haven't recovered to this day. You know, it should have been criminal. And that's why it's hard to have respect for our government. You know, I mean, there are many other things that we'll be talking about. But that article that you wrote, man, if people really knew and understood it, and you've written it in such a manner that people can understand it, they just have to know it's there. When we come back, we're going to make sure we let people know where it is. We got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. On the line, my good friend, Mr. Reggie Jackson. You can join us. 844-967-2789. We'll be back. Something is wrong in this country. The imbalance that goes on in this country, this nation has no right to be over in any other nation talking about fighting injustice and all those things when right here at its own doorstep, it's where injustice is centered.
Yeah, yeah. And this is a thing that people will say trying to argue that you don't know what you're talking about, Earl. This is what they'll say. Well, you know what? The reason that white people are so far ahead is because, well, they've done all the right things. They've made better decisions. You know, if black people would have done what we did, then they would be where we are. And this is where history comes into the picture. If you go back about 100 years, Earl, to right before the Great Depression started, 50% of all homes in America leading up to the Great Depression were in foreclosure. 50% of all the homes in the country, Earl. So what happens to save us from that? The federal government steps in and says, we're going to create the Federal Housing Administration, we're going to create the Homeowners Loan Corporation, and we're going to try to help the nation. But what they really meant was we're going to try to help white people in the nation. They did. They went to those banks that were about to foreclose on those people, and they said, listen, we're going to make sure that you don't go out of business because of these foreclosures. We're going to give you money, and we're going to help those people refinance their loans. Now, prior to the Great Depression, Earl, if you wanted to be a homeowner, you literally had to pay, in most cases, somewhere between 50 and 75% down on a house. Can you imagine that today? Oh. 50 to 75% down payment, right?
Yes.
The interest rates were ridiculous, and they generally gave you like 5 years to pay it off, Earl. So the federal government created the first what are called amortized loans, which means that over the course of the loan, you're going to pay a little bit on the principal, you're going to pay a little bit on the interest, and eventually you'll pay it off. Now, they extended these mortgages out to 20 years at that time, right?
Right.
Gave people significantly lower interest rates, and what it did was it saved those banks. But it also made home ownership something that was considered to be fairly normal in America. And they gave two reasons for doing this, Earl. This is what the federal government literally said. They said that, number one, if we make it easier for people to become homeowners, then guess what? They're going to buy more homes. If they buy more homes, that means we can build more homes, which means we can put men back to work building homes, and that'll help with the unemployment situation, right? So that was their number one reason. Their secondary reason was that, well, if, you know, the scourge of communism and socialism is out there and people are promoting this in America, we need them to think about capitalism. So if we get them hooked on a 20-year loan, they're going to be thinking capitalism. They ain't going to be thinking about socialism anymore, right?
Yeah.
But those are the two main reasons. That's literally what they said, Earl. And so what happens is when they set up this new mortgage – and they started to back these mortgages. So you go to the bank and you get the mortgage, and then the federal government, FHA, backs that mortgage. what they did was they said, well, we don't want everybody to have access to this. We want to make sure that only the right people have access. And what that meant was that they only wanted white people to have access. So what ends up happening is that black people, because of another organization the federal government created, the Homeowners Loan Corporation, drew these redlining maps. They weren't called redlining maps, Earl. They called them residential security maps, showing lenders and insurance companies the areas that were safe to give people mortgages, right? And to give people insurance. And of course, if you lived in a place where it was any black people in any of these 239 cities that drew the maps, they made that area red on the map, which meant that it was very, very difficult to get anybody to give you a mortgage or insurance. It didn't mean it was impossible. You could get it, but it was practically impossible. So what they did is they set it up so that white people with money specifically, and even white people that weren't making all that great money, were in an advantageous position to become homeowners. So now what happens, Earl? 1930s, 1940s, white people are buying up homes using this FHA loans, right? A lot of them were backed by the FHA. And then comes World War II. World War II is literally what drags the United States out of the Great Depression. That's what put people back to work. People don't realize that the Great Depression was still going on until World War II started. So what happens after World War II? Oh, the GI Bill. Oh, we're going to reward all of those GIs. We're going to give them.
They didn't reward all of them. They rewarded a segment of them.
Right. This is what they did. Yeah. They're very clever with this. Very clever. They wrote the GI Bill with colorblind language. Colorblind language. This applies to all of the GIs that serve, blah, 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 who are eligible, blah, you know, right? So you could go to college for free, tech school for free. You could get a VA guaranteed home loan, or you could get a VA guaranteed business loan, right? So now people who hadn't been on the gravy train of the FHA getting these loans before, now a bunch more people are going to be on this gravy train, because this is literally what was. This is affirmative action for white people. This is what the GI Bill was, because a larger percentage of black GIs said that they wanted to go on to, you know, post-secondary education than whites, a much larger percentage, in fact. And, of course, since black people have been shut out from getting these loans through the FHA, they figure, well, the VA is here. But this is what happened, Earl. Okay, the redlining maps were drawn, you know, back in 1934 to 1940, so you know, they don't really even apply necessarily by this time. But guess what? You're these black people, and you're in Mississippi, you're in Alabama, you're in Wisconsin, wherever you may be. These people are not going to give you the same advantages in terms of giving you a loan to get a house. In Milwaukee, Earl, the only bank that would give black people loans for mortgage was Columbia Savings and Loans. Started by the Hellyer family with $10.
Black family, right.
When they moved to Milwaukee in 1923, black family said, listen, we want to give black folks an opportunity to get a loan for a home or business. And eventually, they were so successful with their business that they were giving loans to people out in Waukesha, Earl. Most people don't know that. Throughout the metro Milwaukee area, they were giving loans. But this is what happened. Because of the way the GI Bill was set up, we knew that black people weren't going to have access to the home loans, right? So what happens is, you have an acceleration of white people becoming homeowners. Like, home ownership becomes normal. Because not only did they give people loans, beautiful loans, Earl, low-interest loans, and they literally paid developers to build suburbs for white folks to move to. Bill Brookfield, Bill Brown Deer. They built all of these suburbs.
Germantown.
They didn't exist, right? They didn't exist, Earl.
Right.
They built them with the large needs of the federal government, because you can't build all of these subdivisions unless you have what? You need roads, right?
Yes.
You need electrical grid, right? You need to develop all of the stuff under the ground before you build anything on top of the ground. So they literally started taking money out of big cities like Milwaukee, Chicago, Detroit, and they shifted that money to building the suburbs. And then the federal government said, oh, well, we got to build this national freeway system. You know, we got to – now, this is what they said about the freeway system. We got to build this freeway system to help people get out of central cities in case there's a war with Russia and they start dropping atomic weapons. We got to be, you know, make this so people can get out of those cities. That's what they told everybody, Earl. But the reality was, no, man, we're building this freeway to get people out to these new suburbs that we're inviting them to go and buy a very cheap house in.
You
buy a house out in the new suburbs, Earl, back that time in 1945, 1950, for $7,000-$8,000.
So Reggie.
$300,000-$400,000.
So I always say to people, you think about it. At the time that Milwaukee was the machine shop of the world, and so people who worked, you know, black people weren't allowed to work in those factories for the most part until World War II. And because whites were already, you know, in the wars, they had no choice but to let black people and women work in the factories. Those people who worked in all those major factories made enough money. They weren't college educated, but they made enough money in the factories that they could move it out to those areas. They're the ones who were able to bring those suburbs into reality, man, because financially they worked in the factories. They made enough money to start all of that.
Right.
I mean, you think through all of those things, Reggie. People don't talk about these things because they only see it now for what it is. And so the people who live in suburbs who, unfortunately, in many instances, think that, you know, that life that they have and that they're better than somebody else because they live in the suburb, they don't know that they got a hand up on that.
They don't want to admit it, Earl, because these are the stories that the people that did it back at that time, they knew what was going on, Earl. They knew. Like, here's an example. 1950 census. There's a special supplement to the 1950 census that shows that there were 28,000 active traditional bank mortgages in Milwaukee County. Only 369 were held by people of color. There were 5,000, more than 5,000 FHA loans. Every single one was held by a person who was white. Over 3,000 VA loans in Milwaukee County in 1950. All of them were held by white people. You think they didn't know that, Earl? Do you think that the white people didn't know that they were getting loans and black people weren't getting the loans? Come on, they served with some of these black men. They knew they weren't getting the VA loans.
You know, Reggie, when we come back, man, I kind of want to turn the page and talk about Thomas Jefferson's Monticello and the fact that there are conservatives and Republicans now saying they don't want his history tarnished by wokeism. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. Reggie Jackson is on the line. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Reggie Jackson. He's an author with the Milwaukee Independent. And also, he's one of the founders of Nurturing Diversity Partners. You know, Reggie, I think that when we are in positions that we should be willing to tell the truth, right? And even though, you know, I'm on these airwaves and I know it might anger some people, the truth of the matter is you have to tell the truth. Look, man, my dad went to his grave and America was never fair and just to him and his generation. His father went to his grave, and America was never fair and just to him. His father's father went to his grave, and America was never fair and just to him. And you and I will go to our graves, and America will never be fair and just to us. And so why would we then remain silent as this continues to go on, man. You know, the argument that is being made about Thomas Jefferson by, you know, bigots, because that's what you are if you don't want to face the truth about who and what Thomas Jefferson was, and you want to ignore what took place and what his life was, because he was, you know, one of the founding fathers. What does that, I mean, to people of color, I mean, that's a calumny, man. Come on, man. I mean, we know what the truth is. We know what the history is. And for people to now step in and say, we don't want to talk about that history because it's going to hurt our children, and we don't want Thomas Jefferson's history besmirched. I mean, what kind of arrogance is that, man?
It's the arrogance of racism, Earl.
Yes, man. Come on.
This is what racism does. It allows you to dictate what's true and what's not true, regardless of what the truth is. It allows you to claim that something which is absolutely demonstrably false, you can say is true. You can say that something that there's so much evidence of its truthfulness that no one in their right mind would argue, and you can literally say that that's not true. You can say that those things are hurtful. You can say that little white children, because this is what they're talking about, Earl. They don't give a darn about little children of color learning the truth. They're talking about white kids. When they say that our children will be damaged by this, they're talking about white children. White children who they've been lying to since the day they were born about how wonderful this country is, leaving all the dirty stuff out. When they learn the dirty part, they're gonna go home and ask mom and dad, well, Dad, didn't Thomas Jefferson own slaves?
600.
Didn't Thomas Jefferson rape a little 14-year-old black girl and impregnate her and have X number of children by this little black girl? Didn't that happen, to Mom? Didn't that happen, Dad? How come y'all told me that, you know, Thomas Jefferson was all this? Didn't y'all tell me that you know, that George Washington was the founder of the country and never told a lie? Well, I heard in school today that, you know, he was killing Indians, and he was ordered to massacre whole villages of Indians. I heard that he owned, you know, hundreds of black people, and that he was brutal to them. That's what they don't want their children to hear, because their children will call them out on it, Earl. Their children will say, you've been lying to me. You have not been telling me the truth. And I'm not saying this anecdotally. I'm saying this because I've talked to some of those white children, Earl. I've done programs with children in multiple school districts around the state, mostly white children outside of the city of Milwaukee. And these are the things that they're telling me. They said they want to know the truth. They say they can handle the truth. They're not bothered by the truth. Now, what they say they're bothered by is people lying to them, whether it be in the schools or at home. And so the people that are fighting back and saying, oh, these things are going to hurt our children, these things are going to make our country look bad. No, these things are going to tell people the truth. We've all been lied to, Earl, about American history. Come on. I say this to people all the time.
And the world knows, Reggie. Education. And the world knows.
The world knows, Earl.
Right.
It's not our fault that our schools have kept the ugly parts of American history away from us. We don't dictate what's in the history textbooks, what's in the curriculum, none of those things as citizens. There are a small group of people that are dictating these things. And now this group of conservatives has decided that they're going to push back against what they call wokeness, right?
Right.
You know what I call wokeness, Earl?
What'd you call it?
Is what it is.
Truth. Yeah. Right. I know.
The truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. They're calling it wokeness. They made the word woke, which was after George Floyd was murdered, you know, a badge of honor. Now it's a badge of dishonor in the eyes of many of these people. If you say you woke, man, oh. Now I have to make sure that I say this correctly, Earl, though. When you say you're woke and you're a white person, you're going to get pushback against it from people in the white community. If you're black and you say you woke, ain't nobody going to say nothing bad about you. They're going to be like, man, thank you for telling the truth. this is where the division is in America, Earl. Everybody's talking about how divided the country is. We've never been this divided since the Civil War. Listen, let me tell you what I've been saying, and I'll say this consistently because it's the truth. The division in America is among white people, Earl. They are divided. People of color, black people, Native Americans, Asian Americans, Latinos, we have been telling our stories of being dishonored and all of these things for decades on end by academics in our community, right? And before the academics were doing it, just regular, average, everyday people were saying we're not being treated right. We've been on that same line, Earl, on that same side of the line forever as people of color. Now, after George Floyd was killed, we had some white people that creeped over to our side of the line for the first time in their lives. They're like, oh, yeah, America isn't right. It's not treating people right. And, you know, we're not telling the truth in the history classes. Those white people that crossed the line, they looked back on the other side of the line to where the rest of the white people were, and they were shocked and surprised that those white people were mad at them, Earl. I can't believe that my granddad is mad at me. I can't believe that my neighbor won't talk to me anymore because now I have a Black Lives Matter sign in my yard, and I'm saying that what happened to George Floyd wasn't right, and I'm saying that we need to teach the true history of slavery and Tulsa Race Master. We need the white people that had the courage to do that. They are looking back at their friends, family members, neighbors, coworkers, and they're realizing, man, those people are not happy with them. They want to live in the fantasy of the mythology and the lies of Thomas Jefferson being one of the greatest men in history, despite the fact that he did what he did.
You know,
that's where the battle is, Earl. That's where the division is between one group of white people who became woke, and I wrote an article. I said, it's great that you woke, but are you going to do something about it? Are you going to get out of bed and do something? Right.
You know,
and
Reggie,
the ones who don't want to be
for
one.
Those who don't know you in this listening audience, you travel this state. You've been all over the state, the farthest reaches of this state, having dialogue and conversations with white people across this state, many of them segregated, and you've had these conversations about race. I know in some instances there are people who are mad and angry, but there are also other instances of people who are coming to the realization that, listen, man, this is wrong. It's been wrong, and we need to have a discussion on it. Am I correct with that?
Absolutely, Earl. This is my business, Nursery Diversity Partners. We decided, my business partner, Dr. Fran Kaplan, and I, decided 4.5 years ago that we would step away from doing the work that we have been doing with America's Black Holocaust Museum, doing his education programs, dialogue. We said, let's do it in the suburbs, exurbs, and rural communities. People told us we were crazy, but Earl, we've done this work in over 50 communities around the state. Appleton, La Crosse, Platteville, Whitewater, Green Bay, Racine, Kenosha, Burlington, you know, all over the place, Earl, because white people invite us to come to those places, Earl. They invite us because they want to hear the truth. They want to talk about the truth.
Reggie, hang on, man. Hang on. It's always good to have my good friend Reggie Jackson on the lines. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. You two can join us. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back.